Advent, though, is the Christian, ancient Christian tradition that begins 4 weeks before Christmas, and it's a time of waiting and anticipating, looking forward to Christmas. And if you're new or if you missed last week, we kind of all admitted together that as we come down to the end of the year, we're all feeling a little bit tired. So if you're feeling that this morning, it's okay. You're in good company. My wife got up and looked at me this morning and said, I really want to skip today because I just want one day where I don't have stuff to do, like stuff going on. And I was like, hey, I get it. It's this time of year, because we come to this time of year and we just are worn down by life. You know, the busyness and the pace of the life that we're living just wears us down. And then we get to the Christmas holiday season and all this other stuff gets added up on top of it. Christmas, which we admitted last week, it's no longer just a Christian holiday. This is an all skate. Everybody gets to play. It's an American, fully American holiday. Baby Jesus and Santa and Frosty and all of the rest. Christmas parties, everything that goes along with it. Not to mention, getting thrown together with people that you are sure that you're related to, but you're not exactly sure how that works. I mean, kind of like the video showed. We all kind of know what it's like to be in that kind of situation. And the Christmas season can sometimes feel like it wears us out, because with its emphasis on consumerism and on entertainment and on almost forced celebration, it kind of feels like everybody has to put on the happy face and go to the Christmas party and feel excited about it, even if you're not. In total contrast to that, Advent is a different sort of thing. Advent is a season of time that calls us away from the noise, calls us away from the clamor of everyday life, calls us away from the clamor of the Christmas season that we experience here in our culture and in our society. And it's a purposeful time to focus on the experience of waiting and of longing. We look backward and we think about the Israelites who waited for generation after generation anticipating the coming of Messiah. And we remember Jesus is coming into the world, but we remember that we're still waiting for God to show up in our life in a variety of different ways. Because while Jesus came and initiated the kingdom in its fullness is still on its way. It's still future. And so we are still waiting in lots of different ways. And we remember that at Advent. We remember that God came for us and created a way for us, initiating the kingdom, but we are still waiting. So we began this series in just acknowledging the fact that we're tired and saying that's okay. We all are in that boat to some level or another. You may be kind of a one, it's a continuum, right? Like you may be one, just a little worn down, but you may be here today and you're like at a 10. You're just hanging on by your fingernails, just not sure how you're going to make it through the next few weeks. And as we started this series, I invited everyone to consider, how can we step back from the crazy? How can we step back from the madness that's going on all around us? And how can we begin to engage in intentional practices that will help us come to Jesus? Because Jesus promised that if we come to him when we're tired or weary or feeling heavy laden, heavy burdened, that he would give us rest. So we've been thinking about, how can we do that? What are the practices that we can do to be able to do that? For some of you, it's going to be thinking about the different ways that you can create space during your week to be able to make time to pull away from the busyness of regular everyday life, to do a devotional or to pray or something like that. For some of you, it may be fasting. We have some suggestions on our website, some resources there, newdenver.org/advent. But today, I want to pick up where we left off last week. And I want to push in a little bit deeper into this feeling of tiredness. And I want to help us explore what it is that brought us to this point, brings us to this point pretty much every year. I feel like I get to this point of the year, and regardless of what's going on in my life, I just have this sense at the end of the year that I'm just feeling kind of tired and worn down. So I want to push in a little bit and ask you to take just a minute, and I want you to think about your life. I want you to think about what's happening in your life right now. And I want you to zero in on the one or two or three things that you feel like are causing you the most stress or tension in your life right now. Like, what are the areas of life where you feel frustration, where you're trying to make progress, but you just feel like things are not moving forward? Think about, what is the area of struggle for you? For some of you, that may be work. You may be in a job where you feel frustrated or just disappointed with the way things have turned out in that job. Maybe it's your boss. This could be not just a situation. It could be related to a person that's causing you this stress. Maybe you're feeling great about your job. You love what you do, but you're just overloaded. you have too much going on, too many things pulling you in too many different directions. Maybe for you, it's a relationship. Maybe you're in a marriage that's struggling right now. Maybe for you, it's the desire to be in a relationship and you're not in one right now, and that's causing you stress. Maybe it's extended family relationships, like the ones we saw in the video. That can definitely bring stress. Maybe it's financial stress. Maybe it's a health issue that you're facing. But I want you to bring whatever that situation is to your mind, or that person to your mind right now. And don't worry, this is just going to be between you and God. I'm not going to ask you to tell anyone, because I realize that the thing that's causing you stress may be the person who's sitting next to you right now. So it's okay. It's all right. I just want you to bring it clearly to your mind and hold it there for just a minute. And now I want you to think about, what's the ideal solution to that problem or that relationship in your mind? What is the thing that you've been, if you could wave your magic wand, snap your fingers, and make things change, what is your expectation about what needs to change, or how things need to change, or how that person needs to change for you to feel the peace and contentment that you're longing for? How is it that you feel like things need to change? Now that you've got that clearly in your mind, maybe it's your boss, maybe it's your job, maybe it's something with a relationship. Today, I want to take a look at these things. I want us to think about these things, and I want us to think about them in a different light. Because I think that sometimes as we come to these things, we can lose sight of a bigger perspective of what's going on. And today, I want to take a look at these areas of frustrations in our life, and I want us to look at them a little bit differently. But to give us that different perspective, we're going to go back to look at a very ancient story, very ancient text that we began looking at last week. If you were here last week, you might remember that during these weeks of Advent, we're going to go back to some verses from the book of Isaiah. Now, if you're not a Bible person, or if you don't know much about the book of Isaiah, it's a really fascinating book. It's a book from the Old Testament, a book that comes from a time in ancient Israel and ancient Israel's history that was really difficult for Israel. Isaiah, the man who the book was named after, was a prophet, a man who was given a message from God to give to the people of Israel, somewhere around 700 BC. Now, when you hear the word prophet, I don't know what comes to your mind, but at this point in Israel's history, the way that God primarily communicated with his people was he would give a message to a man or to a woman who was then to bring that to the people. And usually it was a corrective message. Usually it was a message that was telling them that there was something they were doing that they needed to do differently. Often it brought consequences. The message came with a warning. If things don't change, then here's how things are going to go. And this is the case with Isaiah. I mean, in his case, he was speaking into the reality of what was going on in Israel at the time, which was the reality of a declining nation. Because Israel had been struggling for a while. They'd been struggling politically, economically. They'd been struggling spiritually more than anything, really. Because beyond all of the political problems that they had, and they had some big problems, they had bad kings and bad leadership, which is often a reason that, you know, any organization or any nation declines. Beyond the economic and the social problems, there was a lot of unrest in the region. They had military problems as well, because there was the Assyrian Empire was rising, had taken over the northern part of Israel and had already conquered that part of Israel and was threatening to come in and take the southern part, that was the still remaining piece of Israel that was left. So they were facing a lot of military tension. And then there was another empire, the Babylonians, which was rising at the time. But beyond all that, they had a spiritual problem. The biggest spiritual problem that Isaiah pointed out and corrected through his message was that the people of Israel had turned their back on God. That although that God had been faithful and loyal and had brought them out of slavery in Egypt and established them as a nation and brought them to great prominence in the region, given them great kings like David and Solomon, built an amazing economic, flourishing, prospering society, although he had done all those things and he had been faithful, they had turned their back on him in lots of different ways. There was still a faithful remnant of people left in Israel, but for the most part, people had begun going their own way. And so Isaiah is speaking into this reality and correcting them. and warning them that how things are going to go, that things are going to continue to decline unless they turn around, unless the nation comes back. So we're going to jump right in, and we're going to go back today. We're going to start in chapter 8. We were in chapter 40. We're going to jump all around in this book. We are not going to do the book of Isaiah any justice. You should certainly read it on your own. We're just picking and choosing some verses that fit with this season and with the season of Advent. But Isaiah is an amazing book. You should read it on your own when you get time. But today we're going to start in chapter 8. We're going to go into chapter 9 of the book to look at some verses that are related to these tensions that we have, and I think will help to give us a different perspective. So starting in chapter 8, verse 19, we'll put these verses on the screen if you want to follow along. Isaiah says this. He says, "When someone tells you to consult mediums and spiritists who whisper and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? Why consult the dead on behalf of the living? Consult God's instruction and the testimony of warning. If anyone does not speak according to this word, they have no light of dawn. Distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. When they are famished, they will become enraged, and looking upward, will curse their king and their God. Then they will look toward the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom, and they will be thrust into utter darkness." So Isaiah, he looks at what's happening in his time, and he says, it's like people are walking in the dark. They've turned their back on God, and they have decided to go their own way. They've decided that they're going to figure it out on their own, and they're even looking to strange mysticism and consulting mediums who talk to spirits, which, let me just say right now, if you're not a church person, you don't come to church usually, and this kind of weirds you out, you're like, you're rolling your eyes thinking, this is why I don't read the Bible, because it's full of weird stuff that nobody thinks about anymore. I mean, mediums, spiritists, that is so hokey and not real and so out of date. My son came home 2 weeks ago, and he said, "Hey, Dad, guess what my friend Jacob's mom does? She's a medium. She talks to dead people." I was like, "That's interesting. Tell me more." So he told me all about his friend's mom and what she does, and he handed me a book. He said, "I was over there for a sleepover, and she gave me this book, and it's all about how you can talk to dead people as well." So I Googled this lady. I was kind of curious. You know, kind of curious about what that was all about. So she has an office in Cherry Creek, really nice office. For a private session, she charges $1,000 an hour. And before, if you're kind of intrigued and thinking you might want to do that, she's booked, according to one article I read, for 8 years. And she has done consultations for people in Hollywood that you would know. I'm not even going to go through the list. She's been on Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, Fox and Friends, made numerous other television appearances. If you are interested in seeing her, she does have some spots in small groups of eight, only $625 for that. So I would say the medium business is a booming right now. So before you dismiss that as something that's old and weird and out of the Bible, that's in Cherry Creek right now. So when my son asked, "What do you think about that, Dad? Do you think it's real?" I told him, "I don't know, but I think it's probably real. I mean, the Bible talks about this kind of stuff, so why wouldn't it be real?" But here's the thing. The question is not, is it real? Is it helpful? And I told him the same thing Isaiah says. I don't think it's very helpful, because what is the dead? What did the dead have to say to you that's more valuable than what God has already said to us through the scripture? The Bible has been transmitted to us through time. It has been preserved. It's this timeless wisdom that speaks into our continues to speak into our lives. It's exactly what Isaiah says. He says, "Why consult the dead on behalf of the living? Consult God's instruction." The instruction that God's passed down through the scripture is way more valuable than any weird New Age spiritists or mediums or any of that. And Isaiah elaborates. He says that his people, Israel, that they've gone looking for help in all the wrong places, including consulting the dead through mediums. He said it's not really working out for them either. As much as they've turned their back on God and they've walked away, they've cursed God, they've cursed their king, they're wandering around looking only to themselves, looking to the earth, only looking to the resources that they can control, the things that they have access to. And it's not a hopeful picture. As they look around their circumstances, what they see is distress and darkness and gloom. There's no hope. And he says it's like they're walking in the dark. It's like they're walking in the dark. He says they will be thrust into utter darkness. And then he continues. Nevertheless, he says, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoiced at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. So Isaiah looks around, he looks at a world where people have turned their back on God. And they're walking through life trying to figure it out on their own. And he says they're stumbling in the darkness. Have you ever tried walking in the dark? I mean, when it's really dark, like on a cloudy night. Have you ever been hiking or camping at night and tried to get up and go somewhere and it's cloudy, so there's no moon, and you're sort of fearfully taking each step, tripping over things along the way? Or parents, you know what it's like to go to your kid's room in the middle of the night where there's no lights on and you're walking through that Lego minefield? And you step on one of those and you say words you shouldn't say, at least not in church. And that's what he says it's like. It's these people, he says, they're just stumbling their way through life, like walking in the darkness. But he says it's not always going to be that way. He says it doesn't have to be that way. He says, nevertheless, there will be no more gloom. There will be in the future. It won't always be this way. Because while the people had given up on God and turned their back on him, God was not done with humanity. He was not finished. Although the people of Israel had turned their back on him and were choosing to go their own way, he was still determined to make a way for them. He was still determined to give them guidance, to give them direction, to give them a light. Then he says these words that may be so familiar to us because we hear them so much at Christmas. I just heard them beautifully sung to me by the Colorado Symphony Orchestra last night as my wife and I went to see Handel's Messiah. These words from Isaiah: for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time forward and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. So Isaiah speaks of a child who will be born and who will become king, who will sit on David's throne. He looks backward to the greatness of Israel's past, to David's throne. He'll be a king, he'll sit on David's throne, but no ordinary king. Yes, he'll be a wonderful counselor, but he'll also be Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And for this king, he says, there will be no end to the greatness of his government. The Hebrew word here often sometimes gets translated also as dominion or power or authority. There will be no end to this king's authority and power. These are familiar verses to us, and we hear them at Christmas because the New Testament writers associated these with Jesus. Because you see, when Jesus was born, the expectation for this coming king was so high. The Israelite people at this point had been waiting for hundreds of years for the promised king. Because after Isaiah, just as he promised, the Babylonians rolled in and destroyed Israel. And from that point on, Israel would not be a sovereign nation again. Not until 1948. And by Jesus' time, they had been ruled by a succession of empires. And in Jesus' times, it was the Romans. The Romans were ruling over them. And during this time, they were longing for the promise that Isaiah had made. They were looking forward to a king who would show up and who would make everything right, who would lead Israel back to their greatness, who would sit on his forefather David's throne again and bring Israel greatness. They had in their mind a clear solution to their problem. All they needed was this king to come and overthrow the Romans and take back what was rightfully theirs. But that wasn't God's plan. That was not the way that God had intended things to go. You see, Jesus did not come as the conquering king that all of Israel was expecting. He came in humility. He came as a servant. He came talking about loving enemies, even the Romans. Teaching that God's kingdom was breaking through and into the world, but that first the human heart had to be transformed. Before the government had to change, humanity needed to change. The fullness of God's kingdom was still future, but first, he was going to accomplish something that had to be done. Through his death and through his resurrection, he was going to make a way for humanity to step out of the darkness and into the light, to begin to see a different way of living, to see reality as it actually is. The kingdom of God was breaking through into individual hearts and minds and into communities. Jesus invited people to come and to participate in this, to be part of this new community that cared about the coming kingdom and lived as if the kingdom was already on its way. And in that, he offered peace. Peace in the midst of life's difficult situations. He did not promise that the circumstances of their life would change, but he promised that they would change. He offered peace and confidence to face those situations differently. And these promises made 700 years ago, fulfilled through Jesus, I think that they are still so important for us today, and here's why. In his day, Isaiah looked around and he saw that everyone had abandoned God and was going it on their own. They were trying to figure out life under their own strength, under their own power, with what was available to them. And Isaiah looked and said, it's like all of these people are walking in darkness. And yet God wasn't done. God wasn't done with humanity. Advent is a time to remember that Jesus came, that the light came and shone into the darkness to show the way. And when Jesus left, he says, it's better for you to go away because I'm one person standing in one place, but I'm going to send the Spirit of God. And the Spirit will be with all people in all places who invite him to come and be a part of their life. By the power of the Spirit, Jesus could be with us and in us, guiding us. And as Isaiah said, there is no end to his greatness. There is no end to his power. There is no end to his dominion, his power or authority, which is really good news for us today as we think about those things in our life that we're frustrated about, that we're disappointed about, that we're longing to be different. As we think about those things, it's good news because first of all, it means we're not alone. Sometimes you can be in those situations in life and feel like you're the only person who's carrying this kind of load. You're the only person who has to face something like this. You look around and you come to church and you see smiling, happy people and you think everybody's life is all together. Not true. We're all carrying something. Some level, maybe a 1, maybe a 10. Everybody's struggling with something. And the good news is that ultimately we don't have to figure those things out on our own. I think this is partly why we're so tired. Because we come to these situations in our life and they happen to all of us. Regardless of what season of life you're in, whether you're a teenager or whether you're a grandparent, in every season of life, there are things and circumstances and situations and relationships which come, which frustrate us and drag us down and just suck the energy out of us. I think this is partly why we're so tired. And we think if it's going to change, it's up to me. I have to do it. I have to figure this out on my own. We think that life, finding peace in life, is somehow about imposing our will onto the world, solving our own problems. And it's exhausting. It's tiring. It doesn't have to be that way. Too often our concept of peace and our idea of rest and comfort is just like everyone else's around us. It's tied up with our idea about how things should be. We have a plan. We know how things need to get resolved. And if they can't be that way, how are we ever going to have peace? few minutes ago, I asked you to think about your life and about those situations or those relationships that are causing you stress or causing you frustration, the places that are draining energy from you right now. And to think about that situation, bring that back to mind. You probably had an answer, a ready solution that you had that came quickly to mind. What if finding the peace that you long for, the rest that you're hoping for, what if the resolution that you so desire isn't about getting your ideal outcome? What if resolution looks completely different than what you have in mind? You see, sometimes I think we're just like the people of Isaiah's day, so focused on the problems that are just right in front of us that it's all that we can see. We don't have perspective. We're so engrossed by our day-in, day-out dramas that we lose our perspective. And intentionally or unintentionally, we turn our backs on God. And we think, if it's going to be, it's up to me. If this is going to change, I've got to do it. I've got to sort this out. But the good news of Advent, the good news that God came to be with us, the good news that the Spirit of God is still there waiting, present, offering to be a part of those situations, is that it doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to walk in darkness. A light has dawned. Jesus invites us to come to him, to learn from him, how to face these situations with him. But to do that, we have to let go. We have to open up our hands. We have to be willing to consider that maybe resolution, maybe peace, maybe the comfort that we're looking for could come in some different way than what we have imagined. We've got to make space for God to do something unexpected. We have to acknowledge that there is a wonderful counselor. There is a mighty God. There is an everlasting Father. There is a Prince of Peace, and it's not me, and it's not you. The power of his authority and his peace has no end. Ours most definitely has an end. Our power, our authority, our capacity is limited. It's finite. And some of you are bumping up against the end of that right now, and you're ready to let go. The good news is you're in a perfect position to accept what you could never earn or work for yourself. Happiness and peace that is demanded from life never becomes true happiness because it is too narcissistic and self-created. True peace, true happiness is given. It is a gift that must be received. It's grace. That's what Christmas is all about. It's about receiving what you could never earn or produce on your own. But you don't get to fight for or work for the gift. You get to receive it. But we have to make space for that. We have to let go, open up our hands, and at least make mental space to believe that it's possible that there could be some resolution other than the one that we have set in our mind. And the question for you and for me today is, what do I need to let go of? What do I need to open up my hands and let go of? What do I need to make space for God to do something unexpected in my life? I don't know what that is for you. It's as different as the differences of every person in this room and every place in life that we are. Whether it's a situation or whether it's a relationship that's frustrating us, draining us, and wearing us down, whatever it is, maybe it's time to think about how you can take a step back, how you can open up your hands, how you can make room for God to do something unexpected.